Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. Now, John, let's start off with inflation data. We got CPI numbers today from April, and April CPI rose another 0.3% month over month, which was 1/10 more than expected. And what we're seeing year over year is 8.3% inflation or CPI data. That's a little bit down from last month, which was 8.5. Still staying very elevated, but maybe we've seen a peak, at least in that higher inflation readings. I know the Fed wants there to be a peak in inflation, but coming down just 0.2%, that's still very much at these high levels. What's your takeaway, John, from inflation remaining elevated, but at least coming back a little bit from last month's reading?
Hey, Corey. Hey, Shad. Well, monthly numbers don't mean all that much because there's so much noise in them. It's hard to get a really accurate reading with just 1 month's data. So the trend is very important. And the past numbers are very important. And right now we're at crisis levels of inflation. 8% is, 3 or 4 years ago, I came on your show and said, yeah, we're going to have 8% inflation in the U.S. in the near future. You guys would have said, you would have pushed back against that, I think, because it would have been an outrageous prediction. And here we are. And, we're starting to see the markets react as if we're kind of in a crisis. Stocks are getting extremely volatile right now. Interest rates are doing the same thing. We're up above 3%, I think, again, on the 10-year Treasury in the U.S. And just generally, markets are starting to react to what might actually be long-term crisis-level inflation. There's also a chance that this is the peak, in the sense that a lot of things have spiked and maybe they stay at their very high levels going forward, but they don't increase by a commensurate amount next year compared to what they did this year, which would mean the rate of inflation would drop, but it would drop from a high level. So it would still be debilitatingly high prices for a lot of people. So this is basically a mess. And there are reasons to think that this is as high as inflation is going to get in terms of the rate of increase in prices. But there's also some reasons to think that maybe we've got some even more serious problems in the not too distant future. The food thing is very serious, which we can spend some time on if you think that would be a good thing to talk about today.
Well, John, I think it's important what you just stated, that we may see a trending down of the rate of change of inflation. So maybe year over year, it starts trending down, but the prices are still going to be at really high levels. They're not going back to where they were a couple of years ago. And remember when the Fed just wanted 2% inflation, they sure got that and then some. But if we continue even just trending down, but the prices stay higher, for a lot of people, it's going to eat into the consumer's budget. So you brought up food, but you could throw in the energy markets. You could throw in how these raising interest rates are going to affect the housing market. You could also say that consumers are eating into their savings and now have moved fully over to living off credit. The rate of credit in March tripled from what the expectations were and tripled from what they were in February, just showing how much more credit card debt U.S. consumers are taking on. So all in, these high prices are going to hit the consumer. And shouldn't that trend over into hitting Wall Street and hitting the companies and their earnings?
Oh, yeah. We have extreme volatility in almost every measure of economic health going forward. And part of it is because of a lot of trend changes or impending trend changes that are out there. For instance, like you said, people are maxing out their credit cards now in order to buy the necessities of life going forward. And that's by definition a temporary process. You can't do that forever. And pretty soon consumers are just going to max out and then spending is going to collapse. So it's completely possible that a year or two from now, maybe not even that far out, we could see the whole tenor of the economy shift where consumer spending plunges. That sends the prices of a lot of things back down and we're in deflation, and you know how they say, well, climate change is coming and they blame blizzards on it and they blame heat waves on it. Well, it's kind of the same thing with all the economic uncertainty out there. We could have continued inflation as a result of the stupid mistakes we've made in the past few decades, or we could have deflation as a result of those same mistakes. And it's very hard to make any kind of a call about the intermediate future because of that. There's just so many cross currents. But yeah, the food and energy thing is very scary going forward. We're looking at food shortages in a lot of different areas, which could lead to spiking prices and extreme deprivation for people around the world who can't afford to pay those spiking prices. And same thing with energy, where right now diesel fuel is a big area of shortage, which means a lot of truckers either have to pay way up to be able to drive their loads where they need to go, or they just aren't going to do it, which means we'll have shortages in other things that would have been delivered by truckers. And so there's an awful lot going on that point in both directions. You know, tapped out consumers point to deflation going forward, but these shortages and supply chain disruptions point to continued inflation. And I think you put the two together and you get instability more than you get one thing or the other in terms of price changes. We're just going to have extreme volatility in the economy and the financial markets over the next couple of years while we sort this out, assuming it's possible to sort it out at all. And I would come down on the side of, nope, you can't fix this going forward. We're just going to have to live through the market-driven changes that will bring us back to sustainability at some point, like a decade from now. But in the meantime, it's going to be pure chaos.
Yeah, who knows how long it's going to go on for, right? But I think the world has shown us that they do work through these problems, not in the easiest or most efficient ways, but we will, I believe, figure these issues out, however that might be. On the market front, though, you did mention volatility. That has been a key to these markets. The other aspect that I think everybody's noticing is general pressure. It doesn't matter what sector you are in. Stocks, equities broadly are moving lower. And I think the markets, they're a forward-looking vehicle. So they are telling us that these issues that we're experiencing around the world, they're going to be sticking with us for a while. But John, what's your takeaway from a market environment here where everything is getting pushed lower?
Yeah, actually, this is pretty familiar what's happening right now. It's one of the few things that you can point to something recent and say, yeah, this is kind of like that. Because in 2008, everything tanked, tech stocks all the way out to precious metals miners all just fell off the table. Same thing happened very briefly at the end of 2018, and same thing happened again in 2020 when the pandemic hit. And this feels like that, that's no consolation for people who are long anything right now because everybody's getting crushed. But in all of those cases, the Fed reacted by easing monetary policy really aggressively, and that brought the markets back. So this time, the question is, what role does raging inflation play in the next stage of the process? Because if we had 1% inflation right now, it would be easy to predict. The Fed would wait till the pain in the stock market became intolerable, and then they would come in with negative interest rates and massive QE and pretty much anything else you can think of that might possibly be thought of as easy money. But they can't necessarily do that this time, or at least as soon as they would have otherwise, because you got 8% inflation. The Fed cannot ease in the face of near double-digit inflation, because that would just send the financial market spinning off in a completely different, equally crazy direction. So they have to wait longer. And that's the big difference this time, is that the Fed is going to be more reluctant than in those previous times to switch to easing. So the question becomes, what's the number? You know, how far down does the NASDAQ have to fall before the Fed panics and goes back to easing, even if inflation is still high? You know, even if food prices are rising at double-digit rates and gas is $6 or $7 a gallon and all the stuff that could happen next year is still in place. And I don't know what the answer is. I'm sure there is a number on the general stock market or in terms of financial markets more broadly that would switch the Fed over from being tight to being loose. But there's no way to know what that number is going to be because they're legitimately looking at possible double-digit inflation here. And they understand that they have to do something about it. So in other words, we're kind of finally at that place where the Fed only has terrible options. It has to choose one crisis or the other crisis, and that's it. There's no apparent way to get from here to a healthy, stable, organically growing economy without some kind of horrific pain for some group or groups in the economy. So here we are. And, you know, it took way longer than it should have to happen. But this is basically textbook. It's right out of the gold bug thesis, what we're going through right now. And so we'll have to see. Next year will be just fascinating because it's going to be a lot of decisions made by people with tremendous power in terms of monetary policy, but zero understanding of the world in which they're working. So it's going to be fascinating and kind of grisly at the same time, like watching the aftermath of a car accident.
Well, John, that's a good way to summarize it. Fascinating and grisly at the same time. We've had some market commentators on our show that have said the Fed really needs to thread the needle. To your point, you know, the gold bug narrative for decades has been that this would happen, but it's kind of like the story of the boy that cried wolf. You know, they cried wolf and it was, you know, didn't happen, cried wolf and didn't happen. And then when the wolf finally came, nobody in town wanted to hear about the wolf. Well, it seems like the wolf is at the doorstep here, where if they hike rates too aggressively, they risk a recession. If they hike rates too far, they risk an unpayable debt load. If they don't respond to it, they risk runaway inflation. And then people are all prognosticating at what point the market will have a tantrum big enough that they reverse course. But hasn't the Fed kind of messaged to the market over the last few months that they want some of the market to get under pressure to kind of kill some of the demand, and that hopefully that would pull away some of that demand pull in the inflationary markets and maybe temper the markets a little bit? Do you think that they're willing to sacrifice the markets for a little while longer and focus more on their other mandates, which is really the health of the economy and the labor markets?
Yes, they're willing to let the stock market fall from here in the hopes that you get a kind of reverse wealth effect that slows down inflation. But it's highly unlikely that it happens in any kind of a smooth way, if it's even possible. What's a lot more likely is that once stocks get going, once people realize that the Fed's not going to step in and buy the S&P 500 or big tech stocks or anything anytime soon, and everybody just sells and you get this straight down kind of drop that absolutely terrifies everybody. Because remember, a stock market decline used to be just a normal part of the capitalist economy, but now we're so indebted that it's not clear that the system as it currently exists can handle a 20 or 30% drop in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. And they're pretty close to that now. So a garden variety bear market is liable to destabilize a lot of other parts of the financial community. For instance, derivatives now are what? They're close to $250 billion in notional value. A lot of them are tied to interest rates and currency values, and some of them are tied to stock prices. A lot of them are tied to corporate bond defaults. All of those things will become much more volatile if stocks are really tanking. And that creates a much bigger problem, because you've got a lot of big banks that would just be vaporized if their derivatives book blew up. And that almost happened in 2008, 2009. It took trillions of dollars to bail out the banks. Well, we're much worse shape now than we were then. So, and the Fed is aware of this. They know that the risk they're running by letting stocks tank is that the carnage isn't just contained within the blue chip equities market, that it spreads to other markets that in some ways are a lot bigger and a lot more dangerous than stocks. And then it spins out of control. You know, there's a point at which you can't fix this with a 50 basis point cut in the Fed funds rate. You know, that's just going to be laughed at or completely ignored by people who are all trying to get through the same small exit. So that's the risk they're running. And I would say that's one big probability out there. The other is that they wait too long to really confront inflation, and it starts to run out of control with equally dire consequences for a lot of these big markets out there. So, yeah, you know, it's possible they can thread the needle, but it's not likely at this point that they're going to be smart enough or have enough of an understanding of what they're doing to be able to create anything that even remotely resembles a soft landing.
So, John, as much red as we are seeing on the screen day after day, outside of the bump that we're seeing today, one asset does continue to move higher, and that's the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar has moved from starting last year, 2021, at right around the 90 level, the whole way up to almost 104 on the dollar index. Now, I understand the weighting is a lot to the euro, But the fact of the matter is the U.S. and the U.S. dollar are still being looked at as one of the strongest currencies out there. What's your comment on the strength in this U.S. dollar?
Well, a strong fiat currency is almost an oxymoron. I mean, they can be relatively strong, one versus the other, but they're all heading south at an accelerating rate. You know, the dollar lost 8% of its value this year in terms of its purchasing power. The fact that it went up versus the euro in the end just means that those two currencies are even in worse shape than the dollar. And people around the world recognize that, and they're terrified to stay in their own currencies. So they're moving assets into the dollar, but everything's heading south. You know, the fact that the dollar is heading south at a slightly slower rate than these other crappy fiat currencies doesn't change the fact that all of them are headed to their intrinsic value, which is zero. At some point, maybe in the not too distant future, these currencies will just cease to exist in their current form. You know, they'll have to be, it'll be like a Latin American thing where you add some zeros to the currency and bring it back out as the new dollar, or they'll have to go to a some kind of an asset-backed currency system, like a commodities-based currency, where they just define their currencies in terms of a single commodity or a basket of commodities at some much lower value than today. You know, we'll have to have a massive devaluation before we go to some kind of fixed exchange rate currency. And that's all out there. And it's probably unavoidable. There's, unless we, you know, fall into that deflationary depression without the Fed coming back and combating it with insane amounts of new currency being created and dumped into the system, these fiat currencies are basically zombies. They're dead currencies walking right now. And the dollar is no different from the others, even though it's relatively strong. That doesn't mean a thing for its ultimate destination.
Well, John, there's two big alternatives to the fiat currency, that being the precious metals and the cryptocurrencies, and neither one of them has really shined brightly recently. Gold has pulled back some. I guess it's held its own for the most part. Silver, not as much. The cryptocurrencies have basically been chopped in half in the last 6 months. So one would think with all these pressures that we're seeing with higher rates and geopolitics and supply chain issues and the markets crashing, that more people would be rushing into both gold and the cryptocurrencies. Why are they not getting any safe haven bid here in this environment?
Well, gold is it's still in the mid-1800s U.S. dollars per ounce, I think. And that's stable compared to just about everything else out there. So gold is kind of sort of doing its job, but it's also being sold by people who I think are, you know, they're getting margin calls on their tech stocks and they've got to raise cash somehow. So you end up with a baby being thrown out with the bathwater scenario in these kinds of sharp market breaks. I mentioned the three previous to this one. Same thing happened every time then too. Gold just got sold down to ridiculously low levels before it took off again once the Fed came in and started easing. Surprised if this kind of played out the same way. Although with inflation being what it is, gold still is very attractive. And there are a lot of people still buying it aggressively, especially a lot of other central banks. So gold isn't something you should worry about. Now, Bitcoin and cryptos in general are still being treated like tech stocks in this market. They are risk on assets, not risk off assets. So in good times when Apple and the rest of the FANGs are going up, people are buying Bitcoin along with it. In the opposite kinds of times, when big tech is being sold off, then cryptos tend to get swept down with it. And that's what's happening right now. And, you know, Bitcoin is down by 50% from its all-time high. And it's getting whacked today for kind of a really interesting, specific reason, I think, today. And that's because there's a crisis with a previously big thing called a stable coin. It's UST is the name of it. And it's a coin, a cryptocurrency that is designed to match the value of the US dollar. So it's a place where you can put your dollars and then via a blockchain be able to move those dollars anywhere you want to. So it was a really interesting concept. And the company that manages it had bought a bunch of Bitcoin as a way of backing UST's value. But there was a run on it, and now it's down to 30 cents. It went from a dollar, a price that it was never supposed to deviate from, down to 30 cents per coin. And there's a lot of worry that the the manager of that stablecoin is going to have to dump their Bitcoin in order to prop it up. And so that's part of the reason Bitcoin is getting whacked right now. People are seeing that and thinking, damn, that's a lot of Bitcoin if they have to sell it all. You know, if there's nobody there to buy it on that day, what's going to happen? So you're getting a lot of panic selling because of that. And the measure I have of Bitcoin right now shows it being down $1,500 to about 30,000. So very brutal day. And to look at this, it was a flawed concept to begin with. Cryptos are just, you know, meaningless. And I don't think the decision has been made by the marketplace yet about that. Yeah.
All right. Well, John, I'll wrap it up here then, but always good chatting with you, buddy. Hopefully it's not as dire as some of the comments that you had in terms of where the economy is going, and quite frankly, where the world is going. We'll see if everyone can work these issues out, which there are a number of them right now. I'm focused a bit more on the financial markets, and boy, oh boy, they are continuing to show weakness. Another kind of midday sell-off again that just hits every sector. John, thank you as always for your time, man. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. You too.